Thank you, Bridget. Actually, I'm really honored to be here because this is a perfect example where CryoEM, the development of CryoEM, really made a big difference in our ability to do science. So as a user, first of all, thank you all, the community, for developing this method and for being so generous in sharing your knowledge. So because of the connection with the Aliso disease cystic fibrosis, CFTR has been long-term thought after target for structure determination. So I know the CF Foundation for 20 years has been spending more than several million dollars a year for structure studies. And there are lots of pharmaceutical companies who are targeting CFTR, but of course they won't tell you, so good luck tomorrow. Anyway, so our lab started to work on CFTR because we were generally interested in ABC transporters ever since 2008. But whatever we do, this molecule just resists to be crystallized. And it's really not until the past 2 years we were able to make some progress. So a quick background about cystic fibrosis. It's the most common genetic disease in North European descendants. So it has occurrence about 1 per 3,000 newborn children. And this disease comes from different severeness. So it affects from GI to pancreas. But the most severe form of the disease is accumulation of fluid in the lung, and it will cause recurrent infection and also chronic inflammation, which will eventually lead, inflammation, which will eventually lead to respiratory failure and the death of the patients. So all these different forms of cystic fibrosis are caused by mutations, usually a single mutation in the protein called CFTR. So CFTR belongs to a larger family of ABC transporters. Generally, those are very common molecular pumps powered by ATP hydrolysis. So a typical ABC transporter has two transmembrane domains which will outline a translocation pathway, and the two nucleotide binding domains which will bind and hydrolyze ATP. So cycles of ATP binding and ATP hydrolysis will drive the transporter from changes the two major conformations. One we call the inward facing, where the transmembrane pathways face inside the cell, and the other one is outward facing, where the pathway is facing outside the cell. And the hydrolysis, ATP binding and hydrolysis, will drive conformational change. So substrate will be picked up from one side of the membrane and released to the other side. So as a pump, the pathway shouldn't be open to both sides of the membrane at the same time, because if that happens, then the substrate will run down its chemical gradients and then will making it a leak pump or becoming a channel. And that's exactly what happens in CFTR. So for some reason, CFTR now evolved into an ATP-gated channel. So at some point, when what we know is when two ATP binds and the two nucleotide binding domains come together, the channel will open and the chloride ions will run down the concentration gradient. So it is the only channel we know in the ABC transport family. So it's an odd pump. But it's also a very strange channel, because this is the only channel we know it consumes its own ligand. So once it binds ATP, it will hydrolyze it. And this hydrolysis of ATP will reset the channel to the closed state. So then cycles of ATP hydrolysis and the binding will basically gate the channel open and closure. And what's not shown in this cartoon is a unique domain of CFTR that's not found in other ABC transporters. We call it the R domain. Phosphorylation of the R domain is required to open the channel. So this is just a few functional studies carried in a collaborator's lab, Laszlo's lab. This is from a patch that contains several hundreds of CFTR channels. And by incubating the channel with ATP alone will not be sufficient to open the channel. Only after they treated it with PKA to phosphorylate the R domain, now the currents will increase and the channel opens. wash out the pKa will cause channel closure, and completely wash out the ATP will completely close the channel. And here is a patch. It contains only one single CFTR. Now you can see, again, the channel closes for a while until it becomes phosphorylated. Then it will pop open and close. So each open and closure cycle is corresponding to an ATP hydrolysis turnover. So ATP binding will open the channel and hydrolysis will return into closure. So because as an ABC transporter member, so the ATP hydrolysis is tied into channel gating. So not only phosphorylation will gate the channel, it also regulates ATP hydrolysis. So this is data from purified protein, CFTR. First, we treated it with phosphatase to completely dephosphorylate protein. So this is just a dye will sense phosphorylation. And with dephosphorylated CFTR, there is very low ATPase activity. And when we treat it with pKa, we can see phosphorylation signal comes off, and also the ATP hydrolysis turnover rate is boosted by about eightfold. So about 2 years ago, we started to analyze the structure of CFTR in bicryo-EM. So first, we took the sample that's treated with NAMDA phosphatase to completely remove all the phosphorylation. And so this represents the dephosphorylated sample, which we expected not able to hydrolyze ATP and represent the closed channel. So this is a raw image. It's a pretty small molecule. It's about 150 kilodalton and with pseudo twofold symmetry. So it was quite a challenge. But the 2D classification by Reliance shows the sample is pretty high quality. We can start to see not only the micelles, but also secondary structure modules. You can see helices, and those are the two NBDs. So this is our workflow that was carried out about a year and a half ago, so we didn't have a chance to try the newest program yet at that time. This is just an example to show how much we benefit by the different programs developed by many of you right here. So we first do the whole frame alignment in Unblur, and then we also, actually individual particle alignment also helped us quite a bit improve the resolution. Then the CTF was estimated by CTF finding 4 at that time. Then particle peaking and at 2D and 3D classification was done in Reliant. And we collected a very large data set, about 0.8 million molecules. And so 3D classification didn't really show any conformational difference, so which we believe, so the protein is pretty homogeneous. Then because I spent 3 weeks in Nico's lab, so I was very much influenced by his thinking. So in the absence of structure heterogeneity, probably it's best to use all particles, so we'll not miss any good particles because of classification. So, but in the final rounds of refinement, we put all 0.8 million particles into free alignment, and in the end, we were able to get a map with the average resolution about 3.7 angstrom. So this map is pretty heterogeneous also. The transmembrane region shows the best density, and we had no trouble building all 12 transmembrane helices de novo because of the clear side chain densities. The two nucleotide binding domains, however, has much lower resolution, and the map mostly just shows secondary structure features, very few side chain density. Luckily, there are crystal structures of both NBDs available, so we just dock the crystal structure into the map. So what's completely missing in this map is the R domain, which regulates the channel activity. So when we lower the contour of the map, when at the level we start to see detergent micelles, we also see a blob of density showed up in between the two halves of the channel, so which is likely to be the R domain. And from NMR structure studies of individual R domains, isolated R domains, we know it's mostly unstructured. So most likely this region of density, this region has very a little secondary structure. But now with the new developments, we probably should go back to do more mass classification to see if we can resolve more structure features of this region. So just put all this together, we were able to build the structure of CFTR. Or first, the structure was solved from zebrafish CFTR. So it's the N-terminal of the region, which are shown in red here. We call this a lasso motif. So this was the first time we see this motif in any ABC transporter structures. It has been extensively studied by mutagenesis to be involved in mostly protein folding and trafficking. And the two halves of the molecules are colored in blue and green. And so those are the two nucleotide binding domains. And we can see the R domains also jammed in between the two halves of the molecule. So because zebrafish CFTR only share 55% identity to human CFTR, so fundraising people had trouble explaining to patients how much we're related to human, so to zebrafish. So we were convinced to pursue the study of human CFTR as well. So this is done in, so with two, so zebrafish CFTR structure was done by Zhe Zhang, and now Feng Yu joined the Zhe to determine the structure of human CFTR. So the R domain has a little bit more secondary structure. We were able to model a short helices here, but also the majority of the density is still a blob. But other than the R domain, every other part of zebrafish and a human are basically identical. The two structures are superimposable. So we get that out of the way, so we can just focus on what we can learn from the structures. So one question people always have studied for many long time is, what does the ion conduction pathway look like? So here we outline the pathway in a gray mesh. So it's located in between the two transmembrane domains. And one side of the transmembrane domain is open. So this ion conduction pathway is connected to inside the cell, the cytosome, but it's closed off to outside the cell, very close to the extracellular extracellular surface. And the one strange feature of the transporter is highlighted in purple. So this particular transmembrane helices, transmembrane helix 8, is no longer a continuous helix. It's broken down into three parts. And the unwinding of a helix in the membrane region is quite unusual because it exposes all the backbone oxygens and nitrogens, and it's not energetically usually favorable. So they usually exist for a reason. They either becoming a binding site for substrate, or there could be a flexible hinge to facilitate conformational change. And one hint of this region might be important for conformational change is a single leucine to proline mutation, which is highlighted purple dots here. So that single mutation will lead to a dysfunctional channel and cause cystic fibrosis. So I'll come back to this transmembrane helix 8 again when we look at the other conformations of CFTR. So another unusual feature of CFTR is it has an unusually large amount of positively charged residues, a lot of lysines and arginines. Usually, those residues for usual membrane proteins will locate in the cytoplasmic side of the membrane according to the positive charge inside, positive inside rule. But for CFTR, those charges are distributed all over the molecule. So people have done extensive mutagenesis study to map which charge residues is important to recruit chloride ion to the channel. So long story short, the residues that's been identified by mutagenesis to be important for ion conduction are highlighted in purple. They actually nicely line the ion conduction pathway, except for the three pink ones, which is in the extracellular part of the molecule. And the charged residues that's been identified to have nothing to do with ion conduction are actually distributed all over the molecule, all over the protein, not lining the pathway. So the structure nicely correlates with functional study. So CFTR is selects for anions, but it's not very selective. So it lets through most monovalent anions like chloride, fluoride, and bromide. So mutagenic studies cannot identify a single a single residue. If you make a mutation, it no longer it will change the selectivity. And when we look at the ion conduction pathway, the overall chemical environment is highly charged. It's lined with all these positive charged residues. So it's probably what we think is the selectivity comes from the chemical environment of the ion conduction pathway rather than a particular structure or particular residue. So what we can learn about the ion conduction pathway is basically what we call a funnel-shaped pathway lined with positive charged residues. It has a single gate located very close to the extracellular surface of the membrane. So far I present the structure basically represent the dephosphorylated state of CFTR and the position of the R domain prevents the nucleotide binding domain to come together to form a closed NBD, which we know it's required to open the channel. So to stabilize the CSS molecule in the presumably channel open conformation, first of all, we'll treat the protein with phosphorylation, and then we load with ATP, and hopefully we can stable this conformation. The problem is, once we have treated protein with phosphorylation, then CFTR will turn into the conformation that will bind ATP. At the same time, it will hydrolyze ATP, so it will turn over back to the close the channel conformation. So to stop hydrolysis, we made a mutation in the nucleotide binding domains that will enable ATP binding, but not the hydrolyzing ATP. By the way, CFTR has two ATP binding sites, but only one site is able to hydrolyze ATP. So a single mutation was sufficient to diminish its ATP hydrolysis. The same mutation, which it's called it's an E1371Q mutation, also being characterized in membrane to be able to actually prolong the channel opening gate, the opening time. So this, for the wild type CFTR, once you wash out ATP, the channels quickly close, return to the closed state. But once you make this mutation, it takes very long time. So this is 60 seconds. So it takes very long time for the channel to close. So this patch contains four channels. So you can see one channel close, the other one until the all four closes. So it prolongs the opening, the dual time of the opening state of 1,000-fold. So this is what we did. So we made the same mutation, phosphorylate the protein, and then freeze grids in the presence of ATP magnesium. So again, back to cryo-EM. This is the a typical micrograph and a 2D classification. Already you can see the two nucleotide binding domains come together. And again, this data set is quite homogeneous. And again, we used all particles to determine the final structure, which has an average resolution of 3.4 angstrom. So all the transmembrane regions are very clear. And also, the nucleotide in this conformation, the two nucleotide binding domains also have very good density, which enable us to actually not only see all the side chains, but also will be able to build ATP magnesium with confidence. So this is the overall structure of a phosphorylated ATP bond form of CFTR. And what's immediately you can notice the two nucleotide binding domains come together and with two ATPs binding at the interface of the dimer. So another obvious difference between the phosphorylated CFTR and dephosphorylated one is the R domain is nowhere to be seen. So it's completely flexible in this conformation. So this is just to remind you, in the dephosphorylated ATP free form, the R domain jams in between the two halves of the molecule. And this is just a zoom in view of this region. And in the presence of ATP and after phosphorylation, now these two halves have to come together where the NBDs can sandwich ATP for hydrolysis, and the autoimmune is discharged from this inhibitory location. So this release of the R domain is entirely consistent with studies where they cut the R domain off and only express the two half of the channel in the membrane, and they can have a fully functional CFTR channel that's independent, only gated by ATP but independent of phosphorylation. So which we hypothesis, what we learned here now is the R domain is basically inhibitory molecule domain of in the dephosphorylated state, and the phosphorylation will dislocate the R domain and allow the two NBDs to come together and the channel to open. So to analyze the conformational change of the two conformations, we can divide the protein into two halves. One half contains the helical six transmembrane helices and then one nuclear binding domain. And we superimpose each half on top of each other from the two different conformations. What we see is the first half completely superimposed, so they move like one rigid body. And the second half move almost like a rigid body, except for this little region with half helix or third of a helix of TM8 and also a small region of TM12. So these two helical segments seem to rotate, flip around. So they have, on top of the rigid body movement, the two helices actually have a rotation relative to the rest of the molecule. So what's going on here is in this structure with dephosphorylated ATP free in a channel or closed conformation, now I highlight the two helices here. If the conformational change are purely rigid body, the two halves come together, what will happen is we'll end up having an open channel. And with the ion conduction pathway connected from outside the cell to into the cell. But what we see in the structure is this part of the helices actually flip over. As a result, we still have a closed channel. So the channel is still closed at the extracellular surface. So we pondered on this result for a long time. What does that mean? We solve the structure in a state we believe should correspond to an open channel. It's phosphorylated, R domain is out of the way, the NBDs are closed. However, we still see a closed channel. So is there any functional evidence such a state exists? So we went back to the trace of channel recordings, and now if you look at this is a single channel now. After this is as fully treated with was pKa and in the presence of ATP, the channel do not. So the channel is closed when ATP binds. It opens and it closes. This big change is caused by runs of ATP hydrolysis. However, within the channel closed conformation, you also see the flicker closure. So you can see that the channel do not stay open all the time. It actually flicks close. And the kinetics of the flickering rate is independent of ATP concentration and hydrolysis. And that's even more obvious when we look at the channel that is incapable of, the mutant incapable of hydrolyzing ATP. It doesn't stay open all the time. It flicks between open and a closed state. So our interpretation is, when we put this together, is this quick flickering in the presence of ATP and phosphorylation might correlate to the local conformational change between TM8 and 12. And the high frequency seems to be consistent with small energetic barrier between the two conformational change. So it's not a global conformational change, and only the two helices flicker, rotate back and forth, cause the flickering of the channel. So put that together, what we believe is The dephosphorylated ATP-free structure corresponds to the channel when it's fully closed. And in this dephosphorylated state, you can even addition of ATP alone is not sufficient to open the channel, most likely because the R-domain is in the way. ATP may bind to one of the MBDs, but it will not be able to cause the global conformational change. Phosphorylation of R-domain will release R-domain from its inhibitory state, and in the presence of the ATP, the structure CFTR can't prove or disprove his hypothesis. But that just, it's all around here, yeah.
One maybe last question.
Can you explain the biological relevance of this construct that you used for cryo-EM? I mean, is there any effect of having this actually in a real membrane that may be affected by taking it out of the membrane and making it a single particle?
Yeah, so all we can say is so far the structure, so the dephosphorylated structure was solved by wild type protein without any mutation or truncation. The ATP bond phosphorylated structure was determined by one single mutation that will lock out ATP hydrolysis. And that mutation is being characterized in the membrane by David Gatsby's work. So it will respond to ATP phosphorylation and ATP, just like the wild type. The only exception is it will stay open because it will not hydrolyze ATP. So, and also we had correlate the structure. All the functional data were done mostly in membrane. So where the ion conduction pathway is mapped out, and even to the extent how far the MBDs are open, those are all done in membrane, and it's completely consistent with the structure.